It was a sweltering Friday morning in Kalamazoo. Humid. Quiet. The kind of silence that feels unnatural, like the calm that settles when something's terribly wrong. At a narrow bend in Comstock Creek, police had gathered. Not to search, not to speculate, but to retrieve. They were led here by a man who didn't flinch, didn't cry, didn't deny what he'd done. Just quietly told officers, "I killed her." And then, from the depths, the truth surfaced. Hidden beneath reeds and runoff, the suitcase had been submerged for days. A July heat wave bore down on the city, but the water remained cold, preserving the grim secret sealed inside. The scene was silent, save for the lapping of the creek and the distant hum of a generator. But beneath that silence was weight. The kind of weight that only comes when what you're about to see changes everything. They lift the case from the water, struggling slightly with the weight. Step by step, they pull it to higher ground. No one speaks. A breath. A nod. And then, the zipper slides open. Inside is the lifeless body of a woman, limbs contorted, skin pale from the cold. The silence deepens. They'd found her. This is the story of Anaya Mack. It is a story of jealousy, manipulation, and the devastation left behind when those trusted most are hiding everything. Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Sleuthy Stories. If you're new here, this is the podcast where real-life mysteries unfold, one clue at a time. The audio for today's story has been pulled from my main YouTube channel and remastered for this podcast experience. If you'd like to see the visuals that accompany this case, head over to my YouTube channel, Sleuthy Lucy. But for now, sit back, listen closely, and let's unravel the mystery together. Thanks for being here. Well, hello, and welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you haven't already, make sure to hit follow so you never miss an episode. Today's case takes us to Kalamazoo, Michigan. It is as haunting as it is heartbreaking. We're talking about the tragic story of Anaya Mack, a 24-year-old college student whose life was just beginning. She was vibrant, dedicated, and deeply rooted in her community. But behind the surface of her picture-perfect life was a web of secrecy, control, and manipulation that no one saw coming. This case involves layers of betrayal, a twisted obsession, and a devastating crime. It will leave you questioning the lines between protection, power, and silence. You'll also hear actual audio from police body cam footage and interrogation room interviews. Some segments may be hard to make out due to background noise or equipment quality. I've included them to bring you as close as possible to the real investigation, but if you'd like subtitles for those moments, head over to my YouTube channel, Sleuthy Lucy, where the full video version is available. It's a story that deserves to be told, truthfully and completely. So, let's dive in. It was Tuesday, June 26th, 2018, and Loretta Rankin Bailey was worried, in a way only a mother can be. She hadn't spoken to her daughter in 2 full days, and for them, that was unheard of. Sunday evenings were their time. A standing call. A check-in. They were always on the phone. But that Sunday, Anaya didn't answer. And by Tuesday evening, she still hadn't called back. Loretta tried again. She dialed her daughter's number. Left a voicemail. But before she could even hang up, another call came through. It was Jerron White, one of Anaya's close friends. He was calling to ask if Loretta had heard from her. He hadn't. He said he even called her job that morning, the Great Lakes Center for Autism. They said she missed her shift. Now Loretta's concern turned to panic, because this wasn't just unlike her. It was unthinkable. 48 hours had passed, and no one had heard a word from Anaya Mack. Loretta sprang into action. She started calling around, reaching out to Anaya's closest friends, Dominic Thomas, LaQuenda Watson. No one had heard from her. Not a text, not a call. Then she called Donovan Lewis, Anaya's boyfriend. Donovan said he'd seen her on Saturday. He said they spoke on Sunday too, but said she hadn't returned his voicemails since. He added that Anaya had plans that Sunday. She was supposed to meet with Reverend Strickland at the church. Loretta was running out of leads, but she wasn't out of hope. Because if Anaya wasn't at home, there was one other place she might be. Church. Anaya loved her congregation at Second Baptist. She joined at the beginning of the year. She was active. She sang in the choir, volunteered at events. It was her second home. So before she made the call she'd been dreading, Loretta made one more call to the pastor. Pastor Strickland picked up. Anaya had a good relationship with him, trusted him. He told Loretta he'd seen Anaya on Sunday, said she came by for choir business. They discussed an upcoming performance. He said she seemed fine, sounded concerned, said he'd alert the congregation. "I pray we can find her," he told Loretta. But the call didn't settle her fears. If anything, it made them worse, because Loretta knew her daughter. And this silence wasn't just strange. It was terrifying. So she did what no mother ever wants to do. She called the police. In the early morning hours of Thursday, June 28, 2018, officers from the Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety were dispatched to the Hunter Ridge Apartments, a multi-story, off-campus complex on the city's west side. It was quiet, too quiet. One light shone from inside the unit. The television flickered silently in the background. But no one came to the door. Waiting anxiously outside was Dominic Thomas, Anaya's lifelong friend. He had just driven 92 miles from Muskegon after speaking with Anaya's godsister, LaQuenda Watson, and her mother, Loretta, who had recently moved to Louisiana. They were all terrified. No one had heard from Anaya since Sunday. She hadn't shown up for work. She wasn't answering her phone. It had been nearly 48 hours. As officers stood watch, Dominic tried reaching Cora, Anaya's roommate. When she answered, he told her everything. They hadn't heard from Anaya. Police were on site. They were worried.
Hi, is this Cora? Cora, this is Anaya's best friend. Are you at home? Anaya has been missing for 2 days, to my understanding. I drove all the way here from Muskegon because I... Yes, because the police are here as well.
Is she up there?
She's coming here. Okay, thank you.
Cora promised to come to the apartment right away. While they waited, police started asking Dominic questions. Did Anaya have any medical issues? Any history with drugs? No, he told them. She's clean. Always has been. When asked about harder drugs, he shook his head. Not Anaya. And then came the question they were all circling. Does she have a boyfriend? Dominic nodded. Donovan Lewis, back from Indianapolis, working the night shift at a local manufacturing plant. Had things ever turned violent? Dominic hesitated, then shared the things that haunted him. Donovan had thrown water on her before. Another time, rolled up a car window on her arm, as if to drag her partway down the street. There had even been a police call once after an argument got out of hand. Shortly after, Cora arrived. She explained that she'd gone home for graduation that weekend and hadn't seen Anaya since Saturday. She assumed Anaya had done the same. They weren't close. Roommates more by assignment than friendship. Sometimes they didn't see each other for days. But when she returned to the apartment at 6 a.m. Monday morning, she assumed Anaya had been there too. The air conditioner was on. She was certain it had been off before she left. In the washing machine, she found a load of men's clothing. She figured Anaya and Donovan had done laundry. They did that sometimes. But now, nothing seemed so simple. Cora unlocked the door and led officers inside. At first glance, nothing screamed crime scene. Shoes by the entryway. A purse slung on the back of a chair. The low hum of the TV flickering in the dark. It felt like someone had just stepped out. But something about it felt off. As officers moved deeper into the apartment, the signs began to surface. The bathtub was filled, still and cold. A strong chemical smell hung in the air, clinging to the hallway like something unfinished. In the washer, a load of men's clothing was churning, mixed with two rugs from Anaya's bathroom. Dominic walked them into Anaya's bedroom and pointed out what didn't make sense. Her makeup was still on the dresser. Her purse, the one she carried everywhere, was still in the apartment. These weren't things she'd leave behind. Not if she was stepping out. Not if she was going anywhere at all. So the officers headed outside, into the parking lot. They asked about her car. Dominic said Anaya drove a white Chevy Malibu. It didn't take long to find it. It was parked just outside the building. But it didn't look right. Two flat tires, no license plates. But nearby, just a few spots over, sat another white Malibu, also with flat tires. Only this one had Anaya's plates. They ran it. It came back registered to someone else entirely. Now both cars were identified, and still, no recent movement. The plate swap made no sense. To some of the officers, it still didn't feel like much. Maybe Anaya had stepped out. Maybe she'd turn up in the morning. But to Dominic and Cora, something was wrong. Deeply wrong. Cora said she hadn't seen Anaya since Saturday, and she was certain someone had been inside the apartment since then. The air conditioner, which she'd turned off before leaving for graduation, had been running. The washer was clearly used. Officers asked, "Does Donovan have a key?" Cora said no, not to her knowledge. But sometimes they'd leave the door unlocked if he was coming by. Then came the final question. Could they reach Donovan? Neither Cora nor Dominic had a current number. But police were able to track down Donovan's mother's residence. That would be their next stop. Officers left the apartment with split impressions. There were no signs of a struggle, no visible blood, no forced entry, no weapons. But Anaya's car was parked. Her purse and makeup were untouched. Her boyfriend had no car. And no one, not her friends, not her family, not her pastor, had heard from her in nearly 4 days. A few things were clearly out of place. And one looming question remained. Where was Anaya Mack? With more questions than answers, detectives decided to track down Donovan's mother, the person he was said to be living with since returning from Indianapolis. They made their way across town, but when they arrived at her home, no one answered the door. They knocked, waited, knocked again. Still, nothing. No sign of Donovan. No mother. No leads. The silence at that doorstep mirrored the silence that had surrounded Anaya's disappearance all week, and the urgency was mounting. The visit to Donovan's mother's house had gone nowhere. No answer. No signs that Donovan had even been there. Officers returned to the station perplexed. Each thread they pulled seemed to fray into silence, but they weren't ready to close the book just yet. Back at the apartment complex, as dusk gave way to darkness on Thursday, June 28th, something shifted. A call came in. LaQuenda Watson was on the line. She told them Donovan was working nights, a janitorial shift at a local manufacturing plant. He was scheduled to get off work around 3 a.m. And according to what he'd told mutual friends, he would be coming back to the apartment after his shift. If that was true, he'd be there soon. LaQuenda's tip was important, but it wasn't the only thing that prompted the officers to head back over, because just minutes later, someone had alerted the officers to a Facebook post. Donovan Lewis, posting an apology. Cryptic. Emotional. Dark. It said, "I apologize to anyone that ever looked up to me and loved me." To the officers, it looked like a confession in slow motion, like someone grappling with something terrible and about to crack. The timing of the post. The plan to return after work. It was enough to make a move. 3 a.m., the early morning hours of June 29th had arrived. Officers returned to Anaya's apartment. They knocked. Then knocked again. No lights turned on. No footsteps stirred. No one came to the door. But this time, they didn't leave. They knew the weight of the moment. They had a narrow window, a job, a time, and a cryptic Facebook post that read like a digital goodbye. So they waited. They sat in the parking lot, watching the door. Not just because they were curious, but because Donovan might walk up at any moment. He hadn't returned calls, hadn't spoken to police. But now, they had a time, a possible confession, and they didn't want to miss their chance. As they waited, the details only became more confusing. Two nearly identical white Malibus, both with flat tires. One had no plate. The other had Anaya's plate, but it wasn't hers. It was registered to a man named Gustavo. Inside, her purse, makeup, and personal items were untouched. Her roommate hadn't seen her since Saturday. Her best friend, God's sister, pastor, and employer, all worried. But the one person they needed to talk to most was the one person they hadn't reached. Donovan Lewis. The officers were finally beginning to think in unison. Something's not right. Either she's in danger, or we're too late. With everything they'd seen, and everything they couldn't explain, they were becoming more convinced this case needed detectives. And then, just as officers began to pull together their reports, someone stepped out of the dark. A man, wearing a black t-shirt, khaki shorts, and a backpack, approaching the cruiser.
What's going on, sir?
Take me here and we'll talk about it on the way.
Just tell me now.
I killed my girlfriend.
6160, can you come to the apartment, please? Where is she?
We're out with boyfriend. He's reporting at 10:35.
Where is she?
Man.
You got any weapons on you, Donovan?
I don't have anything,
so. You get a pat down.
One officer immediately called it in. 10:35. In Kalamazoo County's 10 code system, that number only means one thing: homicide. The officers stood still for a beat, absorbing what they'd just heard. Then one of them turned to Donovan and said, "All right, I've got to read you something."
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to talk to a lawyer and have him or her present with you before or during any questioning. If you want a lawyer,
Miranda writes, every word crystal clear. When he finished, the officer looked Donovan in the eye and asked, "Now, tell me from the beginning. What's going on?" Donovan began to speak, halting at first, but the words came, quick, unfiltered.
In Indianapolis, I left there alone. Couldn't pay rent.
Hey, give me 1 second, okay?
612.
612 to Eric Barnett. So,
612.
My understanding.
Not sure if you require my last traffic. We got my custody.
Fantastic.
I got back in town about a week ago, or 3 weeks ago, on the 16th. I found out, I went to her home, and I found out they're messing around. I tried to get over it. Told her it's okay. I understand what you did. I respect that you took care of yourself. And we move forward. And we had a great couple weeks. And recently, Sunday, we had an argument as well. Because I just moved back, so I don't have a job. I don't have money. Week before, Sunday, or maybe 2 weeks, I don't know, she told me, you know, you're not doing enough. I told her I could call my dad, ask for some help, and whatever, and she just raised me past me and told me I wasn't shit, told me everything about me.
Alright.
Saturday, Sunday came.
He didn't get far before the officer cut him off. Let's have a seat in the back of my vehicle. Donovan sat quietly as the officer shut the door behind him. Then, turning to his partner, the officer said, "He admitted to everything. Said she's in the creek, east side of town." Just like that. A case they weren't even sure was real was now very, very real. A missing persons report had turned into a murder investigation. Shocked by the dramatic turn, the officers radioed for a detective. This wasn't just a welfare check anymore. This needed to be handled by homicide. On the ride to the station, and later in the interrogation room, Donovan kept talking. He waived his Miranda rights, voluntarily offering more detail. Freely. Eerily, matter of fact. And though protocol required it, the officers reminded him more than once, "You don't have to speak. You don't have to say anything." But he did. He spoke about the night, about what led up to it, about how Anaya died, and about what he did next. Inside the interview room, Donovan Lewis continued to talk. He claimed that Anaya was having an affair with her pastor, Reverend Strickland. Donovan said it wasn't just a pastor-parishioner relationship. He claimed Anaya spent a lot of time with Pastor Strickland, that the pastor would pick her up for church activities. He believed the two were physically involved, and that while he, Donovan, had been out of state, Anaya had continued seeing the pastor. According to Donovan, Pastor Strickland had been paying her rent, covering her phone bill, and had even given her a second car, the one officers had seen parked outside with swapped plates. Donovan also suggested that Anaya had been blackmailing the pastor, exchanging silence for support. He told detectives, when he got back in town, about 3 weeks ago on the 16th, he went through her phone and found out they're messing around.
Just had a rough week. Last week, the car had the pastor mounted. That tire went flat.
Oh, is that what happened?
Mm-hmm. It was a slow week, so you had to keep refilling it and refilling it. And on Sunday, when we found the lighthouse, she wanted to go to church. She went outside, and the front tire was flat.
Mm. Think somebody's doing it? Think the car's just old and the tires are bad, or what?
Found out that whatever she had going off the pastor.
Oh.
And when she got the car, she told me, and McKenna picked her up, and she told me, you know, she got a new car, we got a loaner car from the church. And recently she told me, after I kind of gave her, I told her I want to have a sit down with her because
he ended up taking her out and apparently threatened her.
The pastor threatened her? Over the car, or why?
Because she was using him. She told him she would tell. He said, you can't do this to me.
How was he using her? Like they had a relationship or something going on, you mean?
I went to her mom.
Who's her pastor? What's her? She goes to
the second Baptist, Raging Brother Bus Station.
Okay.
Pastor Stu.
It was a direct accusation, and one Donovan claimed had consumed him in the days that followed. What came next was his account of the night everything changed. Donovan said it started out as a regular night, just the two of them, hanging out and drinking. But at some point, the mood shifted. He was intoxicated, he said. And that's when he brought it up. The messages. The ones he claimed to have seen on Anaya's phone, between her and Pastor Strickland. He confronted her, pressed her about what he believed was an ongoing affair. An argument broke out. Words were exchanged. He told detectives he felt betrayed, that he lost control. The detectives leaned in. What do you mean? They knew the pastor, had partnered with him before, on food drives, youth events, back-to-school giveaways. He was well-respected in the community, a bridge between the police and a neighborhood that didn't always trust them. To hear Donovan name him, not as a comfort, but as a possible concern, was jarring. And then, he said something that made the room go still. He said he had once gone through Anaya's phone and read text messages from the pastor that were explicit, sexual. Donovan shared these details freely before homicide detectives even arrived. He sat calmly, explaining what happened, what led up to it. By the time detectives finally walked into the room, Donovan had already given a full written confession. They didn't waste time. They got right to it. What happened? They asked. Donovan said Anaya was having an affair with Pastor Strickland. To prove it, he showed detectives screenshots. Messages from the pastor, filled with sexual language, suggesting that the relationship wasn't just spiritual. It was personal. Donovan said Strickland had started coming by the apartment more frequently, often picking Anaya up for church events. Earlier that year, she had gone on an all-expenses-paid trip to Mississippi with the pastor. According to Donovan, Anaya had used the relationship as leverage, at one point, even threatening to expose it to the pastor's wife. He claimed Strickland responded with a threat of his own. Around the same time, he dropped off the car to her. Donovan said Anaya told him the pastor had warned, "I'll hurt you." Then came the hardest question of all. "How did you do it?" Donovan told them. That Sunday, he and Anaya were drinking. She was running a bath. He claimed he was drunk and exhausted from staying up all night, going through her phone. That's when he found a text from Pastor Strickland that enraged him. The message read, "I'm trying to give you the best of your life, but you running from it." They argued. Anaya told him to leave for good. She got out one of his suitcases and began packing his things. That's when Donovan said he struck her, rendering her unconscious. Then he went to the kitchen, retrieved a knife, and returned to the bedroom. He slit her throat and then stabbed her. Afterward, he placed a garbage bag over her head, covered her hands and arms, and put her body into the suitcase. He took it outside and placed it in a dumpster in the visitor parking area. Later, under the cover of darkness, he retrieved the suitcase from the dumpster, loaded it into the back of his mother's minivan, and drove it across town to Comstock. There, he stripped down, entered the creek, and swam out into the dark water, weighing the suitcase down with mud so it would sink to the bottom. What he described was brutal and deliberate. He never called for help. He didn't dial 911. He heard her let her die, and hid the evidence. Then he went on with his life, showed up to work, visited family, as if nothing had happened. But detectives weren't ready to take every word at face value. Some of the details didn't add up. For one, the lack of blood. When officers first responded to the welfare check, they hadn't seen any signs of a stabbing. The scene looked too clean. But now, with Donovan in custody, and the case officially a homicide, detectives doubled back to the apartment to take a closer look. That's when things shifted. Small stains were discovered on the hallway wall just outside Anaya's bedroom. More on her bed, in the carpet, and eventually in the floorboards. Using blue light, investigators uncovered signs of a cleanup attempt. There was a strong smell of bleach. Cleaning products were found nearby, used and open. When they pulled up the carpet, they saw blood had soaked straight through the pad and into the wood beneath. Samples were collected and sent to the crime lab, and scattered throughout the apartment, detectives found open alcohol bottles, both in the living room and bedroom, many types, suggesting a heavy night of drinking, just as Donovan had claimed. Outside, detectives also moved to impound Anaya's white Malibu. During the welfare check, officers had noticed her car had the wrong plates, swapped with another nearly identical vehicle in the lot. Both cars had flat tires. Both were impounded. Neither had moved in days. A quiet, almost unnoticed sign of something deliberate. When detectives asked Donovan about the plate swap, he had nothing to say, but he had been methodical. Donovan admitted to cleaning the bath mats in the washer and of tossing his own clothing at his mother's home. He had thrown out Anaya's purse, ID, and bank cards in a dumpster near his workplace. Some of those items were later recovered. He also removed the mattress cover and threw it into the dumpster, but it was removed before police could retrieve it. Hoping someone might have seen something, detectives canvassed the apartment building. They asked neighbors what they knew. Had they heard anything? Seen anything? Several said they were familiar with Donovan Lewis, and most said the couple seemed happy. But now, the evidence was painting a very different picture. And the physical trail Donovan left behind wasn't the only lead detectives planned to pursue. Later that same day, June 29th, another man would find himself sitting across from investigators, Pastor Strickland. When detectives sat down with Pastor Strickland, they already knew the truth. Anaya Mack was dead. Donovan had confessed. This wasn't a missing persons case anymore. It was a homicide investigation. And Strickland was now more than just a community leader. He was a possible link in a deadly chain of events. Still, detectives knew they had to proceed carefully, because this wasn't just anyone. Pastor Strickland was well known, respected, the local president of the NAACP, a key voice among Kalamazoo's Northside religious leadership, and a frequent liaison between police and the community. Some of the officers even knew him personally. If word of this conversation leaked, it could devastate his reputation. So they kept it tight, only sharing what he needed to know. When Pastor Strickland entered the room, he was eager to help. They told him they had a few questions in connection with Anaya Mack. He didn't hesitate. Said both Anaya and Donovan had been a joy to mentor. Framed himself as an advisor and counselor to the young couple. But then came the hard questions. When asked about the nature of his relationship with Anaya, Strickland was visibly caught off guard. His tone shifted. He became defensive, denied any sexual involvement. Everything, he claimed, was part of his church ministry. The car, one of several he and his wife loaned to members in need. The rent and support. Charity. A compassionate outreach to struggling youth in his congregation. But then, detectives brought up the messages. graphic, explicit texts pulled directly from Anaya's phone. Strickland paused. He couldn't explain them. Said other people had access to his phone. Suggested the texts may have been manipulated. He even pivoted, implying that Donovan had a history of abuse and should be investigated further. Strickland insisted he was just an advocate for Anaya, trying to help her through a tough season. Then came the topic of the Mississippi trip. Yes, he admitted. Anaya had traveled with the choir, alongside church members, his family, and his wife. But there, he claimed, she met another young man, someone she had been seeing in secret. Strickland claimed Anaya had saved this man's number under his name in her phone to hide the relationship from Donovan. Was that true? Or was it a convenient deflection? When asked about his whereabouts that Sunday, Strickland told detectives he'd met with Anaya briefly for choir business, then spent the rest of the afternoon with his wife. With no direct evidence to hold him, Strickland was allowed to leave. But detectives wasted no time verifying his alibi. They reached out to his wife to confirm his timeline, and just as quickly, they checked into Donovan's background to see if the claims of abuse held any weight. There was no record of violence, only a minor driving offense. Then, detectives turned to Anaya's phone records. Every call, every message. They wanted to see who she had really been talking to in the days leading up to her disappearance. After Donovan's full confession, detectives asked one final question. Would he take them to her? Donovan Lewis agreed. In the early morning hours of June 29th, he led detectives out to Comstock Creek, just off East Main Street near Sprinkle Road. They parked near a small bridge, where the water below ran dark and shallow in parts, muddied by silt and summer storms. A rescue boat was called in. Standing on the bridge, Donovan pointed out over the water. "Right there," he said. That's where he swam out, dragging the suitcase. He told detectives he'd taken a black-handled knife, the same one used to kill Anaya, and tossed it further down the creek, into the deeper, muddier water. Crews began to search. After several tense minutes of combing the water, detectives located a suitcase, half buried beneath mud and reeds. It was bloated, caked in muck, but still sealed shut. Inside was the body of Anaya Mack. The cold water and thick silt had preserved her remains. The knife, however, was never recovered. Her family was notified. And for the first time since she went missing, they had answers. They were finally able to lay her to rest. Before the headlines, before the search, before the suitcase, there was Anaya. She was just 24, a psychology student at Western Michigan University, with a gentle spirit and an undeniable gift for working with children. She was always dancing, always singing. Sang in her church choir, her voice steady and warm. And to everyone who knew her, Anaya was a light, a giant personality in a tiny body. Patient, kind, joyful. She had plans, dreams that stretched beyond Kalamazoo, degrees to finish, lives to impact, a future she was actively building, one quiet act of care at a time. Her mother, Loretta, described her as deeply compassionate, the kind of daughter who always checked in, who never let a call go unanswered, who showed up for others, even on her hardest days. She was a daughter, a friend, a student, and to those who loved her, she was everything. The recovery of Anaya Mack's body brought one chapter to a close, but what followed was just as heavy, because not even 4 weeks later, detectives received a call they didn't expect. It was Reverend Strickland. He was calling to ask for his car back. He claimed it belonged to his wife, said he'd purchased it from a man named Gustavo, but admitted he had no receipt. no bill of sale. And the title? He said Anaya told him it was folded up in the center console, that she knew where it was. He didn't. The request struck detectives as odd. Callous, even. Because this wasn't just a car anymore. It was evidence. Tied to the murder of a young woman. Tied to a relationship still cloaked in unanswered questions. So no, they didn't release it. And yes, it left an impression. Back at the jail, Donovan Lewis was being held on an open murder charge. But just weeks into his incarceration, something else happened. He made a run for it. In his underwear, Lewis scaled not one, but three towering fences, each lined with razor-sharp barbed wire, unscathed. For 33 minutes, law enforcement scrambled. A manhunt unfolded across the perimeter. But the escape didn't last. He was captured before he could get far. Still, it rattled everyone, especially the people who loved Anaya. Anaya's mother, Loretta, later told reporters, "I was terrified. I didn't want him back out on the street. I didn't want him anywhere near us." As prosecutors prepared for trial, they reviewed a newly released 79-page police report. In it were the chilling details of the murder. The report also confirmed Pastor Strickland's financial entanglement. A car. A cell phone. At least one rent payment. It was clear he had supported her materially. But when it came to the swirling rumors of an affair, detectives found no proof of a physical relationship, just inappropriate messages from him. Not some mystery man he claimed Anaya was seeing in Mississippi. Flirtation. Boundaries crossed, but no confirmed affair. As the trial loomed, Donovan's attorneys approached the prosecution. He was charged with open murder and initially indicated plans to plead insanity. However, in September 2019, he instead wanted to plead guilty to second-degree murder, but that decision wouldn't be made lightly. Prosecutors turned to Anaya's family, especially her mother.
"And he don't need to put my family through anything, because he done already did what he did. And he just needs to just say, you know, I'm pleading guilty and be done."
If they chose to go to trial, Anaya's autopsy photos would be presented. So would the suitcase. Loretta didn't want that. Didn't want to sit through the images. Didn't want to hear every gruesome detail replayed in open court. So, with pain in her voice but grace in her heart, she agreed. The prosecution honored the family's wishes. At sentencing, Loretta Bailey didn't appear in person. She couldn't. The grief was too heavy. The trauma, still too raw. She later shared that she was taking medication for anxiety and depression and said, "I didn't want to see his face. I didn't want to hear anything he had to say." But her words were still heard. A victim impact statement was read aloud in court, on her behalf. A mother's heartbreak. A family's devastation. A life stolen far too soon. And when it was Donovan's turn to speak, he cried, apologized.
"I am beyond sorry for this crime, beyond sorry for this situation and the hurt and pain that I've caused. I can't express it in words right now. I don't know if words will ever do justice."
Said he thought about Anaya every single day. Then the judge delivered the sentence, 25 to 40 years in prison for second-degree murder. He was already serving 17 months to 4 years for the escape attempt. News of the plea deal and sentencing spread fast. Some were shocked. Many struggled to reconcile the quiet church kid with the man who had taken a life. Friends, classmates, even former teammates, all stunned. No one expected this from Donovan Lewis. And still, the rumors about Anaya and the pastor wouldn't go away. The community remained divided. Some pointed fingers. Others defended Strickland's character. But detectives stood firm. There was no evidence of a sexual relationship. Only messages that crossed a line. messages Anaya herself had reportedly shared with a close friend, mentioning inappropriate advances, but denying an affair. No charges were ever brought against the pastor regarding Anaya. But that didn't mean the story ended there for him. In the months after Anaya Mack's murder, the name Reverend Dr. Strick Strickland appeared in headlines again. But this time, not as a community leader, not as a grieving pastor, as a defendant. He was arrested and charged with multiple felonies. Three teenage boys, all members of his church, came forward. Each accused Strickland of sexual assault. One said he felt unable to refuse the pastor's advances because he needed the car Strickland was letting him borrow. But Strickland wasn't alone in the allegations. His wife, Jasmonique, was also implicated, accused of helping lure and coerce teens into inappropriate encounters. Both were said to have used their roles at the church and a local school to manipulate young boys. The alleged abuse had occurred between January and May of 2018, just weeks before Anaya was killed. During the investigation, the Michigan State Police uncovered a trove of evidence: text messages, screenshots, photos pulled from the victim's phones, all supporting their accounts. And that wasn't all. Investigators also uncovered financial misconduct. Strickland had allegedly stolen funds from Second Baptist Church, used a fake degree to apply for ministry roles, and filed fraudulent reimbursement requests, defrauding the congregation out of thousands. In total, he faced 11 criminal charges, including human trafficking, embezzlement, fraud, sexual misconduct, and misconduct in office. The man who once stood beside police, who comforted grieving families, was now the subject of their investigation. But by 2022, after years of delays and pre-trial battles, Strickland struck a deal. He pleaded guilty to one charge: misconduct in office. As part of the plea, he admitted in court that he offered transportation in exchange for prostitution.
Were you in the county of Kalamazoo, state of Michigan, between the months of January 2018 and June 1st of 2018?
Yes.
And at or about that time, that is during that time within the county, did you knowingly offer to sell transportation services to TH and or TJ that facilitated travel for the purpose of engaging in what would be a violation of the laws governing prostitution?
Yes.
The other charges, sexual and financial, were dropped. Prosecutors said the case had grown difficult. Some witnesses stopped cooperating. Others were unwilling to testify. And so, for everything he had been accused of, Reverend Strick Strickland was sentenced to just 6 months in jail, with credit for time already served. He walked out. No trial for the sexual assault claims. No requirement to register as an offender. No charges connected to Anaya. He walked out, legally free. To some, it was justice. To many, it was a failure. A man whose actions had caused deep harm would never face trial for most of them. And though Anaya Mack was never named as a victim, many believed it was her case that opened the floodgates, that her silence gave voice to others. And those voices, they haven't quieted. They've only grown louder. Strickland had fully stepped away from his role at Second Baptist Church in Kalamazoo, then moved to Mississippi, where he became pastor at Galilee Missionary Baptist Church in Mount Olive. However, as of March 2025, he's facing fresh embezzlement charges in Covington County, accused of stealing nearly $90,000 from his congregation there. So while Strickland is no longer pastoring in Michigan, he is still preaching in Mississippi, and now under investigation for alleged financial crimes at the Mount Olive Church. With the trial behind them, Anaya's family returned to what mattered most: her memory. They remembered her not for the tragedy, but for her heart, her dreams, her laughter, her kindness. The prosecutor later reflected on their decision, calling the family's choice to accept the plea a profound act of courage and grace. Anaya Mack's story left an imprint on the city of Kalamazoo, on her classmates, on her co-workers, on her church, and on a generation of young women who saw in her the possibility of something beautiful. What do you think about this case? On the surface, this was a domestic violence murder, a tragic, devastating act of jealousy and rage. But once you start peeling back the layers, you realize this wasn't just about Donovan Lewis or his deadly assumptions. This case exposed something deeper, a network of silence, blurred boundaries, and unchecked power. Donovan was no career criminal. By all accounts, he was a quiet kid, a youth basketball coach, a churchgoer, no history of violence. But that's part of what makes this so chilling, because his rage didn't explode in the moment. It built quietly, fed by insecurity, mistrust, and obsession. He read texts, he watched patterns, and instead of walking away, he made a deadly choice. Then there's Pastor Strickland. No, he didn't kill Anaya. And legally, he wasn't charged in her death. But his actions mattered. The texts were real. The financial involvement was documented. The emotional entanglement, evident. He was her spiritual leader, her mentor. And yet, he crossed a line, one that blurred the difference between helping and grooming. The fact that Anaya's case led investigators to him, that her disappearance prompted deeper questions about his conduct, says a lot about the ripple effects of tragedy. Because without that missing persons report, without that welfare check, without that suitcase, how long would it have taken for those other victims to be heard? In the end, this isn't just about one young woman's murder. It's about a system of trust that was manipulated. A community that turned a blind eye until it was too late. And a mother, Loretta, who now carries the weight of what was taken from her, but still stood tall enough to say, no trial, just peace. So what do you think? Was justice served? Should Pastor Strickland have faced more for what happened to Anaya? Although he escaped full accountability then, new charges suggest his reckoning may still be coming. And what role does silence play in protecting those who exploit trust behind closed doors? Let's continue the conversation down in the comments section below. As always, I'll meet you there. In these stories, there are no perfect victims, just imperfect individuals navigating different roles in life. Anaya Mack was more than a casualty of control and secrecy, more than the consequence of someone's jealousy, more than the silence surrounding a man in power. She was a daughter, a cousin, and a friend to many who now mourn her loss, not because she was perfect, but because she was perfectly wonderful in their eyes. This is why I extend my gratitude to the victims, for being beacons of love and light, despite any flaws that may emerge from their stories. So thank you, Anaya, for being an example of love and light. May you rest in eternal peace. That wraps up this episode of Sleuthy Stories. Thanks for joining me as we uncover the twists and turns of real-life cases. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a moment, please leave a rating. It really helps more true crime fans find us. Want to see the visuals that go with today's case? You can find the full video version on my YouTube channel, Sleuthy Lucy. Check the link in the description. I'll be back soon with another case. But until then, keep your wits sharp and your curiosity sharper.